The Athletic.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, Captain America and the Chelsea X-Men. Bayern top dogs with new K9 while Union celebrate their Bayern streak. Real have Bellingham propelling them. Monaco are in pole position and hello Spalletti and goodbye Mr. Magara. It's all coming up in this Totally Football Show. August 22nd, what a time to be alive. We bring you another extra special international edition of the Euro Show in our Bologna office. It's James Horncastle.
Ciao tutti.
In our Tel Aviv bureau, Raphael Honigstein.
Shalom.
And here at base, Alvaro Romeo.
Hola, hola.
And, oh my word, Julien Laurence.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
G'day, mate.
G'day. G'day.
Jules, when did you get back from Oz?
Last week, Wednesday.
Oh.
Yeah, after 3 weeks.
After 3 weeks.
Yeah, it was really cool, I have to say. The World Cup was great.
Inspirational.
Inspirational. The Australian people, I love you. You have a great country. It was great.
All right. We'll be hearing more hot takes from Jules.
You're welcome.
Throughout the show. Speaking of Australia, Alvaro.
What a weekend.
Yeah.
What a
congratulations.
Weekend.
You want a kiss? Do you want a kiss?
Whatever. I mean, I don't put barriers to love, but yeah, I mean, Spain won it, and that will be my moment of the weekend, of course, because, you know, it was, I think we have become the first country, all together with Germany, that have won the double in men's and women's in the World Cup. So
the second country.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The first country.
But
after another one.
The all first right, country in 2023.
Okay. The first country to be simultaneously under 17, under 20, and senior. Yeah. That's Women's World
Thank
Champions.
Thank you, Jimbo.
So, Germany, can they say that? Nah. Let's have a great moment of the weekend. We'll perhaps touch on that whole Rubiales, chef's kiss moment shortly. But what other moments of the weekend have we got? Jules?
I would pick Thierry Henry being named the front under 21 head coach. I think that's is quite important in his own career to start with, to relaunch his managerial career. I think it's important for that team that have been underperforming for many years because of having bad head coaches, pretty much, despite having really, really good players. So good luck to him. Gael Clichy is going to be his assistant, which I think is very exciting too for him. And then they have the Olympics coming up in a year and the Euros the following year. So some very exciting times ahead for Thierry. And let's see if Thierry can be the great manager that we believe and he believes he can be.
James, your member of the weekend.
Stadio Olimpico, James, where Jose Mourinho was not around because he was suspended along with all of his staff and two of his best players, Paulo Dybala and Lorenzo Pellegrini, for sort of things that went on at the end of last season. So Bruno Conte, remember him, was sort of sat in the dugout, 82 World Cup winner with Italy. And, you know, Roma took the lead with Andrea Belotti, who didn't score a single goal all of last season and has spent much of the summer on his sun lounger reading about how Roma need to sign another striker. Belotti did score, but then Antonio Candreva scored two worldies, former Lazio player. Just unbelievable strikes. I mean, particularly the second one where he takes it down with his right and curls it in with his left and just, you know, celebrates in front of the curva there. Two of the best goals of the weekend in a goal-heavy weekend, which we'll get to in the roundup.
Not as goal-heavy as the Bundesliga, though, Raf. Which moment, though, of this extraordinary opening round of top-flight action caught your eye?
I think it has to be quite an unoriginal choice, James, but the magnitude of the occasion at the Weserstadion, 74th minute. Yes, he was there. He had a sniff of goal and he scored. And I was there to witness it. Harry Kane's first goal in the Bundesliga.
Für den Ausmann und jetzt der Harry Kane. Und da ist Harry Kane. Und da ist Harry Kane. Und dieser Harry Kane macht, wofür er eingekauft worden hat, ist, er macht das 2-0. Und wie abgezockt war das?
I don't think it got any bigger than this at the weekend. But as you said, lots of really interesting, crazy stories to talk about. This one, though, the pivotal moment.
All right.
The pivotal moment was really Raf not introing my moment of the weekend with my moment of the weekend, James.
I just thought I'd mix it up this season.
New season, new Rafa.
Oh, so you actually prepare for the show this season?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've prepared a new intro.
I like Tel Aviv Raf. It's fresh perspective on things.
Well, I, for one, want to hear more about this Harry Kane fellow. So let's start with the Bundesliga.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Friday, the opening round of action in the Bundesliga, and record Meister FC Bayern, who'd been plunged into crisis 7 days before in the Super Cup, plunged right back out of it, beating Werder Bremen 4-0. Kane with the assist for the opening goal and another shortly afterwards. Rafa, it just looked so right.
He looked very right, even though it took some time for him and the team to really find each other. I thought in the first half, Bayern had a lot of possession, but failed really to play the right pass, or his timing was a little bit off. There was sort of a adaptation process going on, and you could see that it's not going to be instantly the perfect harmony. But then a little bit of space opened up in the second half on Werder Bremen, who were quite defensive and quite poor, to be perfectly honest, when they opened up. And it was a wonderful pass from Alphonso Davies, who had a great game. And then it was that classic Harry Kane moment. One-on-one with the keeper, took his time, waited for the keeper to make a move, and then really cool finish. And on the whole, you know, with this assist added to it very early on that gave Bayern the lead and really made their life much easier, it was kind of the perfect debut after all the build-up and after, as you said, that negativity after the Super Cup where he came on and really probably shouldn't have played. Looked very tired, looked out of sorts. Still not, I think, 100%. He went down with cramp 10 minutes before time. But very encouraging for Bayern and very daunting for the competition that even sort of a half-baked Kane-Bayern combination can be as effective.
Mm. They look pretty in sync, though. I mean, nice as the goal was, that assist for Leroy Sané, that kind of instinctive flick, was remarkable for two players who'd not really had much time together. Matty Haynes asking, is Leroy Sané capable of having the same relationship with Harry Kane as the Englishman did with Heung-min Son at Spurs?
Yeah, that would be nice. That'd be great if that were to happen. Leroy Sané played well, scored two goals. Kingsley Coman, I thought, was actually Bayern's best player. He was absolutely outstanding on the left. And Thomas Tuchel was very effusive, and he said some very interesting things after the game. He said Kane made all the Bayern players better by drawing attention to him. He talked about all the attacking players. And he also had this fantastic impact on the training ground, being always happy to train, having great sort of charisma and leadership. And, you know, for a team, as we said many times last year on the pod, who sort of seemed to lack a little bit of confidence, a little bit of leadership, a little bit of personality, I think he is so important already beyond the goals, beyond the assists, just by being this big player who just is happy, who is happy with himself. He radiates quality and confidence and that swagger that Bayern really have needed quite desperately. And yeah, hugely encouraging signs. Still some issues, of course. But yeah, for a team that, as you said, was in crisis, even though it was perhaps an inverted comma crisis, it was as good as it really gets on an opening day of the season.
Mm, magnificent fourth goal from Matthias Tell as well. Elsewhere, Leipzig, the team who laid down a marker supposedly by beating Bayern in that Super Cup game the week before, they lost 3-2 at Xavi Alonso's Bayer Leverkusen.
Yeah, this was probably the biggest game of the week. Two teams that are seen as contenders to push Bayern, if not all the way, they're at least quite close. And it was going to be a statement of whoever would win to really underline their credentials. And it was very open, lots of great goals. Dani Olmo scored again after his hat-trick. But ultimately, Leverkusen came out on top because they had Florian Wirtz playing the goal. His third goal was a bit fluky. He hit himself, basically, and then the ball bounced over Blaswich in goal. But still, the kind of game, high-quality game, the kind of high-quality win that will make people feel a lot better about this, or even better, I should say, about this Xabi Alonso team, who have been tipped as one of these sides to watch. Very entertaining, really good quality, good depth in the side as well. I think they're going to be a really fun team to follow this year.
Okay. Dortmund, who, of course, were narrowly pipped by Bayern for the title last year. They had a 1-0 win against Cologne, but Dortmund overpowering Cologne. That could be your headline there. But let's hear about Union Berlin, who picked up where they left off last year. 4-1 victory over Mainz. And Kevin Behrens there with the hat trick.
Yes, and the first one came after 50 seconds to really give Union lift off. Kevin Behrens, one of those unsung heroes in the side, played very much second fiddle to Geraldo Becker and might still play second fiddle to the likes of Kevin Folland this season. But given a chance again, he scored a hat-trick, all of them headed goals, which is something that we haven't seen in the Bundesliga since 1997, I believe. And because we don't have many German strikers scoring goals, there was even some people linking him with a call-up to the national team after the game. Perhaps slightly premature, but I think the biggest story of this game, in a way, was Union, who many people, including me, have tipped to perhaps have a more difficult season with the Champions League coming and that ongoing transformation to go from sort of underdogs to buying slightly more seasoned players. There's talk of Leonardo Bonucci coming this week as well, while at the same time not giving up all the unique qualities that made them successful in the first place. You know, that very direct style, picking players that have perhaps been overlooked elsewhere, that togetherness that they have. And I thought it's going to be a very difficult balancing act for Urs Fischer, the coach, to pull off. But on the evidence of this win against Mainz, maybe they can exceed expectations for a fifth time running, not just in the Champions League, which is going to be amazing for them to be there, but even domestically.
Just love the fact that Behrens scored a hat-trick of headers. I think he's pretty special.
Yeah,
it's
very
really
special.
Rare that, you know, I know it's been a long time in Germany. Mm.
Yeah. When was the last time in France, Jules?
Well, in England, it was in, with Salomon Rondon.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember that.
About 5-6 years ago.
All right.
Yeah, it's really rare. It's cool. And Ludovic Ajorc, who missed two penalties in the same game. That's pretty rare, too.
Mm.
That's never happened in the history of the Bundesliga. Same player missing two penalties in the same 90 minutes.
Good Lord. Good Lord. Whitaker Watt was asking about the keys to Union Berlin's unexpected success. You have kind of listed them a bit there, Rafa, but Whitaker also says, or Walt, for all the gang, are there any Union Berlins out there among the newly promoted clubs in the leagues you follow? Alvaro?
Yes, I would say that maybe Granada. Maybe Granada for the way they got promoted last season. I mean, they were clearly the best team in the Spanish second division, and they got a player like José Callejón that I really want to see how he features as a right back or a inverted wing back, because he's quite old, but at the same time, I think that he has been a little bit underrated in Spanish football.
Okay. James?
Well, historically, you would say Chievo, probably, but Chievo don't really exist anymore. And the team that did as well as Chievo in terms of points recently was Monza, but Monza were backed by Silvio Berlusconi's money, which Union Berlin
not quite
did not
the
have,
Italian
so
Union
it's not
Berlin.
Really the same thing.
Getting a no from both you, really, at this point. Jules, anyone in France?
Maybe Clermont.
Clermont.
I mean, Clermont is not Berlin, but no. But in terms of the spirit, the kind of it's a family club. They do things in their own budget. You know, they try to be clever in who they signed. They have a bit of a direct style of play, although Gastien, the coach, also likes nice football and to play nice football, but they certainly overachieved in the season where they were in Ligue 1 for the first time in their history.
Very nice. Oh, Pippa McCulloch also asked Rafa for your thoughts on Endo to Liverpool. What can he bring to Klopp's side? I see that his old team did all right without him this weekend.
Yeah, they did really well without him. They beat VfL Bochum 5-0 to take over the lead of the Bundesliga in the first game. Of course, Bochum maybe with a claim to being the worst team in the Bundesliga, so it should be taken with a degree of caution. But Endo will bring a lot to Liverpool. Great character, a great person. People I spoke to at Stuttgart were raving about him as a human being, how nice he is, how genuine he is, speaks good English. But of course, also brings a lot to the table as far as his footballing qualities are concerned, great at winning the ball back. very smart in his decision making, great energy, never gets injured. You know, out of the last 102 games, he played 99, and the three he missed was one with suspension, one with COVID, and one with concussion. So super dependable, super pro. And yeah, I think many people in a way expected a bigger club to sign him because he was too good for the Stuttgart team, but they weren't perhaps prepared for the big club to be quite as big as Liverpool. And that's going to be very interesting to see if he can make that huge step up, you know, to playing against relegation with Stuttgart, where he excelled, to playing for the top four and playing in Europe under Klopp. So yeah, great player, great signing. Perhaps not quite as sexy as some of the other midfielders that were mentioned, but I think he should give them a lot.
Excellent. Next up, listener, we're off to Serie A.
The Premier League is back, and the Athletic Football Podcast is your essential football companion this season. Whether it's dissecting Chelsea's astronomical spending, assessing Spurs in a post-Harry Kane era, or the growing impact of Saudi Arabia's riches, we'll be there 4 days a week this season as we get to the heart of the biggest stories. Join me, Ayo Akinwolere, and the Athletic's esteemed roster of writers on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the usual podcast spaces.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Lots of clubs happy with their new signings this weekend, Bayern with Harry Kane, Real Madrid, more wonders from Jude Bellingham. How are they feeling in Milan about Christian Pulisic? Well, here's comms on Monday night's game at Bologna.
Ancora Christian Pulisic, ecco il capitano della USA National Team che avanza. Eccolo Capitano America che dà la palla, si chiude il triangolo fra lui e Giroud. Ed è Christian Pulisic che segna un meraviglioso 2-0. USA, 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 USA.
Ecco Capitano America, cracking opening round. And the final game was Milan's 2-0 win at Bologna. The second goal coming there from Pulisic after he was involved in the build-up for the first one from another of his former Chelsea, well, of the coterie of former Chelsea players, Olivier Giroud. A Loftus-Cheek also in the mix there. There were big wins for all sorts of clubs, but let's start with Milan because you were at this game, James.
I was. I got to have a chat with Christian in the porter cabin outside the Renato Dell'Adda after the game, just as he was going to go and hop on the train back. And yeah, I mean, he called it the perfect night for him. He couldn't have wished for it to go any better. And yeah, I mean, it was Bologna's become quite a difficult place to go on the when Thiago Motta's been in charge. I think they had the best defense at home last year, along with Inter, who reached the Champions League final. So yeah, the reason why Milan signed Pulisic was to make these games easier and to give them a bit more incisiveness, score goals. And, you know, not only did he get the second, but his involvement in the first one was also really important. So, yeah, it was good. I mean, Jerry Cardinale, Milan's owner, flew out special to see the first game of the season as well. And yeah, I think particularly in the first half, Milan were good. Second half faded, became quite a loose and open game in which Bologna could maybe have got back into it. But yeah, I would say aside from, you know, Candreva's goals for Salernitana and that Sortea goal for Atalanta against Sassuolo, yeah, Pulisic was right up there. And you know this phrase, James, a great kind of biglietto di visita. Sort of, that's my calling card, guys.
Nice.
So
Arajit asked, based on early impressions, which Serie A team had the best transfer window? And do you foresee any major deals happening in the last week involving the top teams? I ask that now because a lot of people might say Milan at this point.
Yeah, although there's quite a lot of scepticism because they have signed players who, for the most part, do not play in Italy. So they're outside of this loop that happens where Serie A teams just recycle players between themselves. So they look at Noah Okafor from Salzburg and they're like, who is this guy? Because they've already forgotten, he was very good for Switzerland against Italy in the World Cup qualifiers. Chukwueze, for example, Alvaro, we were talking about him last week, really exciting player, but again, comes from Villarreal, not from a Sassuolo or something like that. And so, the kind of Americana that is very, still very popular in Italy means that there's a lot of focus on Pulisic. But yeah, Milan's transfer window has been good. I mean, they've completely overhauled the midfield and the attack. But we have to see, over the longer term. The other team I think that has done well in the transfer market is Atalanta. Atalanta, after selling Højlund, their forward line looks really exciting. And one of the storylines of the weekend was Charles de Ketelaere, who Milan signed for €36 million only a year ago, who flopped at San Siro. Didn't score a single goal in Serie A last season, scores on his debut for the Bergamaschi. So I think there's a feeling that Atalanta are the right club for him, and that some of the other deals that they've done are pretty good.
Mm. All right, they had a 2-0 victory against Sassuolo. Milan were 2-0 winners. Inter beat Monza 2-0. Both goals there from Lautaro Martinez. There was a big win for Napoli, 3-1 at Frosinone. The brace from Victor Osimhen. Juve looked revitalised. 3-0 winners at Udinese with Chiesa and Vlahovic both on the score sheet. The biggest scoreline of...
And Rabiot.
Sorry, Jules, you're absolutely right. Fiorentina, 4-1 winners at Genoa. Ander Iturralde says, are Fiorentina this season's most significant dark horse in Serie A? Is there a world in which they could contend for the last Champions League spot?
Oh, I think they could. In terms of dark horse, they're not really a revelation anymore because first season under Italiano, they were the most improved team in the league in terms of points difference from the year before. Last year, they obviously reached two cup finals, Coppa Italia final and Conference League final. I think they'll look to try and win something this year. They play Rapid Vienna in a Conference League playoff on Thursday night. So that's the first step to doing that. But, it's still quite a big leap to get into top four. But they've made some good signings as well. And at the moment, they've kept Sofyan Amrabat, who wasn't in the squad for the 4-1 win against Genoa in Genoa, where they were 3-0 up at halftime. They've kept Nico Gonzalez, even though Brentford have made an offer for him. And Artur Melo, who only played 13 minutes for Liverpool all last season, has kind of become a bit of a running joke for his part in that swap deal with Barcelona and Miralem Pjanic. Played 90 minutes and sort of played actually pretty well. It wasn't the man of the match, that was Giacomo Bonaventura. And Fiorentina also have this kid who's come through their academy called Kayode, who started, who's a surprise starter. And he was part of the Italy under-19 team that won the Euros. He scored the winning goal in the final. And there's quite a lot of excitement around him as well. So, Fiorentina looked good. And I've got this impression just from watching the games this weekend is that there is a real gap between the top seven and the rest in the league, in terms of quality. The only shock, I would say, this weekend, aside from Salernitana getting a draw at the Olimpico, which they did last year, with Lazio losing in Lecce, which they also did last year. But as for the rest, it looked fairly easy for them.
All right.
But Juventus, James. Poh, Juventus.
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't want to meet them down an alley on a dark night. They were sparring for a fight. They looked fierce. It was kind of like, okay, you've taken our 10 points away last year. You've taken Champions League football away. You've taken all of European football away. Well, two middle figures to that were coming for you. And they, in the first half in particular, I mean, they ran over an Udinese side, which this time last year were really, really good. And they're really physical as well, Udinese, and it didn't matter at all. So seeing Chiesa play off Vlahovic, seeing Vlahovic score as well and sort of celebrate with the ultras, who again were making chance for the club not to sign Lukaku and to keep Vlahovic. And then Vlahovic posts on Instagram a photo of him with the ultras saying, "You." You know, I think, it was impressive, not just for the mentality, but also Allegri, who, you know, has been accused of playing antiquated football, which has a place in the 1980s, but not in 2023. Instead, in this game, pressed high, fullbacks were coming into midfield, just good, really good. So, you know, Juventus, now they can only focus on the league, James. Mm. People saying, okay, you know, maybe this is the year they come back.
Maybe so. Since our last show, James, great news, Luciano Spalletti confirmed as Italy manager. Spalletti's start will come away to North Macedonia on the 9th of September. Then they're home to Ukraine a couple of days after at San Siro.
North Macedonia, the team that beat Italy in the playoff semi-finals and stopped them going to the World Cup. So, I mean, a lot of Italians are haunted by that, and certainly the prospect of that being one of your first games is nervy. So, you know, Spalletti deserves the job. He obviously went on this sabbatical with from Napoli, who kind of unilaterally extended his contract. And so he's been being paid by Napoli, and it looks like the Italian Football Federation didn't pay the clause to get him out of it. So that's between Spalletti and Napoli to still resolve. You know, Spalletti wanted that sabbatical because he wanted to have more time with his kids. Doing this job will still allow him that. But, you know, it's one of those things where Spalletti's a pretty prickly character as it is. And, you know, when you're a national team manager and you're only sort of, okay, you meet up with the players every month, sort of autumn to winter, and then you go 3 months without seeing them, and then you have this like 10-day, 2-week period of intense scrutiny. God only knows how he's going to react to some of that. And also just like, you know, I mean, it was such a high with Napoli. You just hope that this isn't a jading experience, you know. It's not easy being there. Coach of the Italian national team. So, but obviously a lot of people are very excited by it.
9th of September, North Macedonia, Ukraine shortly after. A new managerial chapter beginning there. This weekend also saw one of the greatest ones coming to an end, though, with the passing of Carlo Mazzoni, Mr. Magara. Chris L20 says, can you convey what Carlo Mazzoni meant to calcio fans across Italy and several managers in the Premier League as well? Grazie mille in advance. James, we'll come back to that. We'll do that at the end of the show and sign off with a salute to Sor Carletto. Next up for us, La Liga.
Hello, listeners. If you're someone who is just too busy for a regular length podcast in the morning, we have something for you. The Daily Football Briefing brings you bang up to date with the biggest football stories in just over 10 minutes. Whether it's David Ornstein on the latest big signing, or Matt Slater on a takeover saga that won't go away. We'll bring you right up to speed, all before you've finished your first coffee of the day. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all the usual platforms, and make sure to like and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode.
We're sponsored for this episode of The Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. You're listening to the Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Sports Podcast Awards Soccer Podcast of the Year.
Spain next. So much to discuss here. Let's go to our Liga correspondent, Rafael Honigstein. Rafa, what's the top story?
Don't know about the top story, but there was a wonderful clip of Malaga fans protesting the fact that their club hasn't signed anyone, turning up at the airport and just picking a random tourist and pretending that he has been signed by Malaga and presenting him with a shirt to sign and giving him scarves and everything. It's really worth checking.
Oh, that's the second best signing video from Spanish football this week. The Santi Cazorla Lord of the Rings extravaganza has to be seen to be believed.
That was good. And what about...
It was terrible. No, it was terrible, Alan.
I was going to say that Santi Cazorla one, I don't rate it. It's good that Cazorla is back, by the way. Yeah, yeah. But what about the video of David Raya's grandfather? I don't know if you have seen that one. No. Arsenal did it, and it was very nice because David Raya brought his family to Colney, I believe, just to be unveiled as an Arsenal player, and his grandfather was there, David Raya's grandfather, and they gave him a shirt, and Edu and Arteta took a couple of pictures of him as well, as if he was becoming a new player for Arsenal. The man got very emotional, and it was very nice, actually. I think that it's worth revisiting that.
Oh, beautiful. That's very touching. Lots of emotions in Spanish football, of course, following the World Cup win at the weekend. A certain amount of controversy regarding the post-game scenes and people grabbing their crotches next to the royal family and that kind of thing, which I personally have no problem with. But back in La Liga, how was round two?
Well, that's a very open question, but I would say that, number one, I'm very surprised about Rayo doing so well after Iraola departed, because I think that Francisco, the former Elche manager, has one of the most ungrateful jobs in Spanish football right now, which is succeeding Andoni Iraola, and he's doing well with Rayo having already 6 points. The surprise package for me is Valencia as well, because they've got 6 points too, and they won again after beating Sevilla in the first game of the season, and they are trying to sign as well Rafa Mir, Sevilla striker, the one who deputizes for Enesiri, and if they manage to sign on loan Rafa Mir, it will be a very clever move by Valencia, who, by the way, they got themselves as well Sergi Canós, a player who is trying to relaunch his career after a difficult 2023, the former Brentford player, and Real Madrid is on top of the table. I think that this is very important too. Considering that they are playing with no number nine, really, Karim Benzema left, and this has changed many things. Last season, the one-twos of Vinicius on Karim Benzema were, they had a nuclear impact in all the defenses of Spanish football, but now that possibility doesn't exist anymore. And Jude Bellingham, a player that we spoke about last week, well, scored a brace against Almeria. Vinicius scored another goal. I referred to the power that Real Madrid has in midfield this season, that probably is going to let them run over many La Liga sides. But aside from that power, they also have tasty players like Toni Kroos, who is still, in my opinion, in his prime, even though he's 32 years old now, or 33. And Modric, if you need to resort to the man, he's going to do the job. Of course, it wasn't a perfect Real Madrid, but we know that Real Madrid normally doesn't seek for perfection in this type of games, just the 3 points, and they did it. So yeah, those could be probably my most interesting moments of the weekend. We'll talk about Barcelona and about Atletico as well.
Yeah, Vinicius with the third goal for Real Madrid. Lovely goal it was too. And then afterwards, adopting Bellingham's, paying homage to the new signing by adopting Bellingham's goal celebration as well.
Well, there is a good harmony in there. That's fantastic, I guess. And the youth of Real Madrid is something that catches my eye automatically too. I mean, they have done the proper renovation of the squads that won multiple titles up to 2018, and I think that many players are hungry.
Nice. If it's youth you're after, though, how about Barcelona unveiling yet another teen prodigy? Who's this latest one?
Lamine Yamal. I mean, we talk about the guy. Last season, he started for Barcelona at Montjuic in the first game of Barcelona in that ground, and there is a
16 years of age?
Yeah, and there is a shining light about this player. I think that you want him to get the ball, and that is probably one of the best compliments that you can give to a player. He is a good dribbler. Sergio Reguilón probably knows about that, but he also crosses the ball very well, and he crossed the ball a couple of times to the second post really well in that game, creating really good chances, especially one cross for Pedri that Pedri actually wanted to give back to Lewandowski, and that didn't work. But Yamin Lamal has something, that's for sure. And he's playing ahead of Ferran Torres and Ansu Fati. Ansu Fati, 3 years ago, he was the biggest prodigy of Barcelona Academy for a while. Ferran Torres, over 45 million pounds for his signing 18 months ago only. And Lamin Yamal has taken over. I mean, he's playing the Dembélé role, more or less, obviously, with the differences. Lamine Yamal is not as explosive, but he's got the technique and he wants the ball all the time. And as I said before, I mean, there is like a shining light about him. It's very special.
Very nice. Torres did manage to get on the score sheet as Barcelona got their first goals of the season late on with a 2-0 victory over Cadiz. Satuheino, Alvaro wants to touch on that business on Sunday. Is there any news about Luis Rubiales' future? Luis Rubiales is the president of the federation who caused international controversy by grabbing Hermosa and planting a full-on smackaroo on her lips. Yeah. Also pictured grabbing his crotch wildly, although stood next to members of the Spanish royal family during the game. And has there been a lot of as much outrage in Spain about this as there was internationally?
Yeah, the thing is that maybe that was cooked slowly, and the outrage came like 3-4 hours after it happened, because it was when people started flagging that this had happened, that it became a thing. Luis Rubiales talked to media like 6 hours after all that. I think like he spoke for the first time from the airport of Doha, because Spain was, the contingent was returning to Spain. And I remember that he was talking to Cadena Cope, and he was saying that whoever criticized that were idiots, basically, were idiots. So he didn't show any remorse or any apologetic attitude in the first 6 hours. But then on Monday, I believe, he uploaded a video apologizing about that, but not in the right manner. He was apologizing to those who felt offended, but he didn't show, again, any type of remorse about that. I think that the biggest problem is that Rubiales is not totally aware of what he did. He doesn't know what he did wrong, but clearly he did something wrong, because he was using a position of superiority and a public scenario just to give a kiss to a player, and the player didn't react. But imagine that the player had reacted in a bad way, which she had all the right to do. I mean, what would have happened?
There was video afterwards of her saying that she didn't like it, but then the Spanish Federation put out a kind of quite an official statement on her behalf, saying that she actually thought it was all fine and a good relationship existed between her and Rubiales. Who, am I right in saying that in the locker room afterwards he said he was going to go off to Ibiza and marry her?
Yeah, basically he said that.
Invited the whole team,
I'm going to invite you, all of you, to Ibiza, and I'm breaking news. May I have your attention, please? I'm marrying Jenny Hermoso. No. She was doing all that. She was basically profiting a moment of euphoria that wasn't entirely his.
Right.
Just to make some comments that are utterly despicable, and remarks that are totally unacceptable.
Has the Federation always been this close to women's football in Spain? I'm thinking back to the Super Cup not long ago, when none of the Federation turned up and the players had to go to a table and pick up their medals one by one without even a presentation.
Yeah, that was ridiculous as well. That's why I don't like the total appropriation of this success by some media outlets and the patriotic appropriation of it by the Spanish FA, because I believe that the Spanish FA hasn't always been there for the Spanish women, Spanish clubs. In fact, I give more credit, if I may, to Levante for being the first club who created a women's side in Spain. Athletic Club Bilbao was one of those that followed suit as well. It was very nice to see that Levante and Athletic Club Bilbao had at least representatives in that squad. Oyane, for example, the Athletic Club Bilbao player. And I give also a lot of credit to this group of players, because 15 of them, this is a story that we know about, sent a letter to the Spanish FA saying that they weren't happy with the treatment that they were getting by Jorge Vilda, the manager. Three of them came back. Imagine the squad the Spanish would have had with Patrick Guijarro, for example, Mapi León, Amayur Sarriegi, Sandra Paños, the goalkeeper of Barcelona. And the players just forgot about the past, and they look at the future, and the horizon was winning the World Cup, and they did it. And I think that it was a truly remarkable achievement. All that said, I would say that Jorge Vilda also made key decisions during the tournament because he changed the goalkeeper. Catacol was the selected one for the knockout stages ahead of Misa. He used Jenny Hermoso, the woman who received a kiss by Rubiales, as a striker first, but then as a midfielder because Alexia Putellas, who is still recovering from that ACL injury, couldn't play together with Aitana. And I think that, you know, Spanish players have been phenomenal and the success has to be especially on them.
Magnificent. Thank you, Alvaro. Next up, Ligue 1.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Ligue 1, the team from the capital running away with it as ever. That's Monaco, of course. Yeah, top of the league.
I know, Adi Hütter, Rafa's friend, doing really, really well in those two games. They were very convincing at the weekend against Strasbourg to win 3-0. They scored four goals in the first game against Clermont away, so they would be tougher opposition, of course, but Wissam Ben Yedder, who has been accused of rape and who is under investigation, still scoring goals, still playing, by the way. I guess he's still innocent until proven guilty, but we'll see what happened with that. But Minamino, remember Minamino from Liverpool, who Adi Hütter knew from when he was 19 at Salzburg, is really getting the best out in a different formation. I think Adi Hütter is changing a lot of things at the club, which is good, certainly for the better. And we saw a wonderful Minamino at the weekend, scored two goals and assisted the third one for Ben Yedder. So really good stuff from Monaco. They've been clever in the recruitment. They lost some big players, of course, like Disasi, who went to Chelsea. But Fofana is still there. Camara is still there too. And they've signed Wilfried, the Ivorian centre-back, who looks really good. So they are doing well. And Denis Zakaria, who was a flop at Chelsea, let's be honest, is looking very promising for them too. So very interesting stuff.
Very nice. They are top. PSG, 11th,
Jules. 11th!
I'm going to say something. My guilty pleasure of the season is going to be Jules talking about Luis Enrique. I don't know why, but I anticipate that. I'm looking forward to it so much.
I've always been a Lucha fan.
For now?
For now, yeah.
That Spanish bloke.
The Asturian.
The Spanish.
The Asturian guy.
Tribune Bristaton. Le pied gauche d'Abouklad qui le met, qui le transforme et qui fait rugir le stadium. L'égalisation de Toulouse. 87e minute de jeu. Le stadium qui explose littéralement.
So, 0-0 with Lorient on the opening weekend. This time around, a 1-1 with Toulouse. This despite the fact that Mbappe came off the bench to score a penalty 9 minutes after making his entrance. Let me guess, lots of possession, not much end product. Was it that kind of thing?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Lorient, as we said last week, they had 939 passes that they made. This time it was a bit less. I think it was just under 700. There was still some positive stuff this time, but Mbappe and Dembele, who came on just after the break, after 50 minutes, changed everything, as you would expect from players of that quality. Still was not enough because Hakimi gave away a stupid penalty right at the end and Toulouse scored and they got a point. But there are reasons to be a bit worried because of how sterile they can be at times with all the ball and the possession. I get that. But I think Mbappe and Dembele are going to change this team massively. And I think there's also a lot of promises in the way they are starting to move the ball, that in such a short amount of time, clearly, and Luis Enrique has already implemented these ideas. And again, you can not agree with these ideas and the methods. But I think it's pretty impressive when a coach in such a short time already has a stamp on what the team is doing and the style of football that they're playing. So they will get better. They will improve. They need to get Gonzalo Ramos some chances for him to score. But Mbappe and Dembele coming back and getting full fitness very soon is a huge boost.
Okay. Another Spanish manager who's come in and is turning things around is Marcelino at Marseille. Things not going too well there either.
No,
draw this weekend with Metz, and also last week getting knocked out of the Champions League qualifiers.
Yeah, on penalties against Panathinaikos, which was really bad. It's bad for French football in general not to have a chance. There was still another, there was the playoffs to follow after that. So Marseille would not have qualified straight away, but it would have been good for them to try to get there. It won't be the case. They will hopefully go into the Europa League, but I mean, Marcelino, you can have a new manager. The problem is half of the team has changed already. Aubameyang has arrived. Illiman Ndiaye has arrived from Sheffield United. Ismail Assar has arrived from Watford. So they've had a lot of players coming in and some of the leaving. Kondogbia is there. So it's just taking a bit of time. But against Metz, they started well. They were good for the first half. And then I don't know what happened in the second half. Maybe they got tired, but they completely disappeared. And a game that was... that will be remembered because Kevin Ndoram, the Metz player, said at halftime on French television that Metz were playing like use a gay slur, basically, to describe his team's performance, which I think he's going to get heavily banned for, and rightly so. But overall, it was still not good enough for Marseille. And they will be, again, big games to play. PSG playing Lens next week. But Marseille will play Brest, who are top of the league as well, with Monaco after two wins in two games. So I'm a little bit worried for Marseille in the way that Marcelino will need a bit of time, I think, to get his 4-4-2 to play well, because it's such a complete different style of football to what Tudor did last season.
Tough season ahead then. Jules, what else should we talk about from the second weekend of Ligue 1?
That we saw the last game of Jeremy Doku, of course, with Rennes, where Lens, a good 1-1 draw. He came on in that second half, and obviously he's on his way to Manchester City now for €60 million. It's a big move for him. It's a lot of money paid when 3 years ago he cost Rennes half of that. For someone who scored 12 goals in 92 games, I think it was, they still need to improve a lot in his end product and what he does with the ball in terms of assist and goals scored. But the potential is incredible. So if Pep can fulfill that potential, he's only 21 years old. There's a wonderful player there. He just needs to get better in the last third of the pitch.
Well, that sounds positive. Unlike the start of the season that Olympique Lyon have been making, Jules.
Incredible, James. Two defeats in the first two games. They were, battered by Montpellier at the Groupama Stadium on Saturday, 4-1. They were 4-0 down. It was 3-0 down and then 4-1 down. Moussa Al-Tamari, the Jordanian Messi, who's doing wonderful things for Montpellier. He's a wonderful player, really. Left-footed, scored two goals, assisted one. What a great signing for Montpellier after coming on a free from Belgium. But for Lyon, it's just a catastrophe, really. The crisis that they're in, Laurent Blanc not happy there, not having the signing that he wants. The club really being in absolute chaos. Like I said, got sent off too, that doesn't help. He will probably miss the PSG game the following week because he's going to get too much ban at least, I think. So really, really bad. And if you count the preseason friendlies that they had, four of them, they lost them all. Ooh. So it's six defeats in a row now.
Yikes.
For Lyon. So I don't know if they're going to sack Blanc now, John Textor, the owner, who I really don't think he has any idea of what to do and how to run a club like that, because there are really a shambles everywhere, on the pitch, off the pitch, in the recruitment area, everywhere. And that's not looking good at all for them.
They're in the bottom two, Jules. Yeah. Obviously, we're only two games into this season, but are the prospects there for them to turn this around, do you think?
I mean, the players are still good, Barcola, Cherki, Lacazette, all of that. But I don't know. I think you can't just rely on young players or someone like Lacazette to get you out of the hole that they're in. Mm. I think you need more of that. You need more of unity in that club, a clear direction of where you want to go and how you're going to get there. And they don't have that at all. And I know they wanted to get rid of Jean-Michel Aulas last season, and they did. The problem is, clearly now, there's nobody running that club. And it's a huge club. And now, I think the signs are really, really bad for them.
Yeah, all right. Well, keep an eye on that. For now, though, let's leave Ligue 1 there and finish off next up with our salute to Italian coaching great Carlo Mazzoni.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Well, James, sad news then this week that Carlo Mazzoni passing away at the age of 86 after a 40-year career, mainly at smaller sides. There was Roma in there. There was Fiorentina as well. He didn't win much, although I was stunned to see that he'd actually picked up an Intertoto trophy along the way. Well done to him. But despite that, he was one of the biggest figures in Italian football, one of the most dearly loved, especially in the southern end of things. Can you sum up why he meant so much?
Well, you mentioned that he, for the most part, played or coached smaller clubs. I mean, he's very associated with AS Roma because he's from Rome. He's from Trastevere, which is one of the most kind of quintessentially Roman parts of the city. And, you know, when he was coaching
He was the guy. He didn't give Totti his debut, but he was the coach who made Totti feel at ease and comfortable within the team, and sort of really established him in the first team. And he was a protector of him. And I think it's one of the things is a lot of people say, it feels like a cliche, but that he was a second father to them. And you look at the people who say that he was a second father to them. There's obviously Totti. Then at Bologna, there's Beppe Signori. I was at the Bologna-Milan game, and there was a big striscione banners in the Curva Bulgarelli, kind of in tribute to him, because he was coach of Bologna three times. And whilst on one occasion he took them down, another occasion he took them to the Intertoto Cup semi-finals, which was, again, sort of Intertoto specialist, Carlo Mazzone. And then, of course, at Brescia, he had Baggio and Guardiola. And, you know, Guardiola was obviously appeared after City's game against, what was it, Newcastle at the weekend, with this T-shirt, which had Mazzone and Pioveni, one of the directors at Brescia, Pioveni trying to stop Mazzone from going out and celebrating under the Atalanta curva, because this was Brescia Atalanta, which is one of the lesser known rivalries in Serie A.
Pretty well known in Italy. And that incident that so many people have referenced, Pep on his T-shirt, but a lot of other people as well. I guess it's the standout image for all the amazing things that he did. And he did do amazing things. Mazzone, you talked about his time with Totti there. Also the guy who first moved Pirlo into that deep-lying position, which he subsequently so excelled at. But just a fantastic man. He was a bit of a philosopher, even though being about as kind of Casareccio as you were likely a person to meet, very kind of homespun. But some great quotes from him. One in particular, he says, la tecnica è il pane dei ricchi, la tattica è il pane dei poveri. So technique is what the rich clubs live on, the small clubs live on, tactics. And he brought so much of that to the various sides, the countless sides that he managed. Yeah. But to go back to the derby, September 2001, because maybe people are thinking, well, so what was so special about that? Yeah, so Bergamo and Brescia are really close to each other. What are they, about 50 kilometres apart?
Yeah, and Brescia is the hometown of Roberto Di Zerbi. And so for Di Zerbi, this was he wasn't involved, but as a Bresciano, this was it's a big part of their identity as a civic identity, but also the identity of the team, because this has gone down in folklore. Really.
Right. Probably the most famous Brescia-Atalanta match ever. It's September 2001. Huge game, like about 1,000 years of rivalry between these two cities. Brescia take the lead. Roberto Baggio putting the ball past to Massimo Taibbi. I don't know if you recall him, the Atalanta.
Blind Venetian.
Blind Venetian. Anyway, lots of Brescia celebrations, but by the half-time whistle, they're 3-1 down, and the Atalanta fans are giving it all that, because Mazzone, for them, is guilty on two counts. He's Brescia manager, but he's also Roman, so there's lots of Romano di Merda and Fili di Butan and all that, and Mazzone's having none of that. You can see him on the bench seething away. Anyway, 75th minute, Baggio takes the ball down on his chest, spins and shoots before Taibbi has a chance to react, and it's 2-1. And Mazzone famously looks towards the curva and says, "E mo se famo il 3-3, vengo lì sotto di voi. If we equalise, I'm coming over there." Last kick of the game. Roberto Baggio has the free kick.
Cross morbido in mezzo. Deviazione. Il pareggio del Brescia. Il pareggio della Brescia.
And off he goes. Probably the second most famous run in Italian football after that one in the 82 World Cup.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that Pierluigi Collina, arguably the most iconic referee, was refereeing that day. And, you know, sort of when Mazzone is sort of coming back to the sideline, he sees Collina coming over to him, and he knows what's coming, so he just says, "Buttami fuori, me lo merito, lo sa, like this. So he's like, "Yeah, send me off. I know. I'm going. It's fine," and that sort of thing. And so, just that.
It looked like a nature documentary or something. This six-year-old guy in a tracksuit, like an angry rhino, thundering down in slow motion towards these Bergamaschi and just swatting away anyone who was trying to stop him. Well, it was glorious stuff. And yeah, he got a 5-game ban for that.
There's another lovely anecdote in one of the obituaries where I think when he was coach of Roma, there was Amadeo Carboni was the fullback, and he was playing on the sideline where Mazzone was coaching, and he kept going forward. And Mazzone shouts over to him, like, Carboni, how many games have you played in Serie A? And he's like, 300. And Mazzone then says, how many goals have you scored? 3. And Mazzone says, well, get back there. I don't want to see you anymore going forward. Stop it.
So, good progressive management. That day, by the way, the Brescia-Atalanta game, that was the day that Guardiola arrived in Brescia to start with his new club. And, bewildering.
Yeah, and I mean, we're just talking about the progressive tactics. I mean, the thing is with Mazzone, is he was a player that every number 10 wanted to play for. In an era when, because there was Arrigo Sacchi's 4-4-2, there wasn't a role for these guys. You know, Gianfranco Zola had to go and play in England in order to be the player that he wanted to be. Roberto Baggio was, you know, shackled and, you know, mostly kind of quite unhappy playing for these teams that were all run by Sacchi's disciples. And Mazzone was the guy who was like, you know, you're my guy. But with Guardiola, another kind of, you know, measure of who Mazzone is, Brescia said, look, we're signing Guardiola. And Mazzone was like, no. I've told this guy, Giunti, that he's going to play in that position for us this year. I've given him my word. And, you know, my word is my bond. I don't break it. So he was initially resistant that they'd gone out and signed Guardiola. And then obviously was very, very happy to have Pep. And, you know, Pep invited him to his first Champions League final in Rome, when Barcelona beat Man United, and, you know, claims to have learned a lot, you know, from Mazzone. So, you count the legends that have kind of paid tribute to him and the kind of players that they were, and it really does speak volumes for Carletto Mazzone.
As he said when he saluted Roma, his boyhood club, when he got fired by Franco Sensi after 3 seasons there, a bittersweet moment for him, and he went and then he supposedly said to the team, boys, we didn't win anything. Ma ammazza le risate che abbiamo fatto. Boy, the laughs we had.
Yeah, we didn't win anything, but boy, the laughs we had. Yeah. Amazing.
Anyway, Carlo Mazzone, That brings us to the end of today's Totally Football Show. Many thanks to you all for being with us. We will return in some way, shape or form next Tuesday. We'll have a lot to talk about then, no doubt. But for now, Alvaro, many thanks to you, Jules, James, Rafa, and you, listener, and producer Charlie. Catch up with you soon. Bye-bye for now.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.